Blog Talk Radio.
Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media interview. Following months of rumors, the two satellite radio companies, Sirius and XM, last week confirmed one of the industry's worst-kept secrets. Their only hope of ever making a buck may well be combining their businesses. Will Howard Stern and Martha Stewart soon be under the same Kmart comforters as Opie and Anthony and Oprah Winfrey? Will Major League Baseball and the National Football League both be available to sports fans from the same radio provider? Will Sirius honcho Mel Karmazon be satisfied being number two to XM chairman Gary Parsons? Will Mr. Media ever have to listen to Radar Love on terrestrial radio again? To address a few of these issues, I've invited Eric Rhodes, publisher of Radio Inc. magazine, into the Mr. Media podcast and website this week. Published every other week since 1989, Radio Inc. is perhaps best known for its annual 40 Most Powerful People in Radio issue, the radio industry version of the Forbes 400. I've known Eric for almost 18 years, since I wrote for the predecessor to Radio Inc., The Pulse of Radio. Eric's publications are devoted to the business of radio, so I thought he'd be the perfect person to offer perspective on the proposed Sirius-XM merger. Eric, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Bob. It's nice to touch base again after all these years.
It has been a while. What was your initial reaction upon learning that Sirius and XM actually intend to merge?
I was not surprised, and of course I had a little bit of an insight from inside the industry. We've been rumoring this throughout the industry and in our daily newsletter, RadioInc.com, for months, literally months. And having friends on the inside of both companies, there's been a lot of chatter and a lot of discussion, and it was believed really the moment that Mel Karmazin went on board, that was the master plan. As a matter of fact, I think a week or 2 weeks after Mel came on board at Sirius, we had a story about a rumor about a merger between the two companies. So it's been going on now for a year, year and a half, 2 years, however long it's been since Mel's been in there. So it was not a huge surprise, but of course you're never sure if these rumors are going to be true.
Right. Now, were you surprised over that period of time how Karmazin brought Sirius around to be taken far more seriously than it was at the time he arrived?
Well, again, I wasn't surprised because Mel has incredible amounts of credibility. He is, in spite of all the things that you might hear about him, and his operating style, some of which are just legend and probably not true, Mel has an incredible ability to see things that others don't see, to have a vision that others don't have, and he has the ability to turn something that is sour into something that's sweet. He's done it time and time again. He did it with Infinity Broadcasting, and then he went public, and then he went private again, and then he went, you know, then he went to CBS and so on. So he's got this incredible ability, and I don't own stock in Sirius, but I seriously thought about it at the time Mel came on board, and because I think, you know, Mel is good at turning these kinds of things into something that's very valuable. And it was expected. You know, when Mel left the job at CBS, there was all kinds of speculation that he was going to go run Disney, that he was going to do something else at another major media company. And the fact that he didn't do those things, which he probably could have had those opportunities, and the fact that he went to Sirius sent a major signal. It was kind of like a missile across the bow of the radio industry that, hey, radio's top player is now working with the competition, if you will, if you take that attitude about it. My attitude is a little different, and that is my attitude is that I feel that it's not really the competition, it's just a different form of radio. From a consumer standpoint, it's still radio.
Mm-hmm.
It may be approached differently. It may have different components, but it's still radio, so I think that raises the tides of all ships. I don't look at them as the competition as many people in radio do.
What I want to come back to that in a couple of minutes, but what impact has satellite radio had on terrestrial radio financially and creatively?
Probably very little.
Hmm.
Financially, I would say it's had no impact. The radio industry is in a little bit of a lull right now. It's experiencing very low amounts of growth. We hold an annual forecasting summit in New York every year. And at the forecasting summit we did in December, all the analysts gathered and we predicted that the 2007 year is going to be either flat or about 1% growth. And so the industry is not going through a huge growth spurt right now. But that's not necessarily anything to do with the satellite radio, because, you know, those revenues are about advertising revenues.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Sirius and XM are not really advertising-based models, yet. And we'll get into that at some point, too. So I don't think that they've affected the revenue picture. On the creativity side, I think that radio broadcasters have always had their own way of approaching things, and quite frankly, XM and Sirius are really doing the basics of radio, and they're doing what radio has always done really well. They've always done great creative. XM and Sirius have had the opportunity to not have the financial pressures right now, the financial pressures that mean you have to run a lot of commercials, financial pressures that mean that, you know, you have to do certain things to get ratings. The reality is that XM and Sirius don't have to get ratings right now because ratings are what drive advertising, and since they don't have any advertising, there's no need for that.
Hmm.
So when there's no pressure, then programming creativity is a lot more easily accomplished than when there is pressure. And, of course, that pressure has affected the creativity levels of a lot of radio stations in the United States, but certainly not all of them. You do have companies and you do have individuals who are doing very good radio and very creative radio and not necessarily doing the things that drive some consumers nuts. But that's, you know, that's here and there, and it's not everywhere. You also have companies that are doing the opposite, that are just getting a little too commercialized. Although if we have time, we should talk about a study that just came out about the impact of commercials, because it's the opposite of what anybody thinks.
Mm. Well, I'm curious about something. On the financial side, it would seem to me that the defection of Howard Stern from terrestrial to satellite did have a big impact, going back to the point when Clear Channel wiped him off of its stations, and then up to the point when he left the CBS, I guess the CBS network, and I mean all of those stations that carried him lost a tremendous amount of revenue that I don't think they've made up yet, have they?
No, and I would say that that is a very good point that I did fail to articulate. CBS, I believe, I don't have the figures in front of me, but my memory tells me that Stern made up about $60 million of revenue for the CBS stations. Stern obviously made up a fair amount of revenue for the individual stations that were not CBS-owned that were carrying him, whether they were Clear Channel or otherwise. So taking $60 million out of $19 billion certainly hurts. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, that's not the reason that radio is flat. It certainly had a piece of it, but I wouldn't say that it. I can't say that satellite radio in general has been the reason that radio is flat.
Hmm.
That is a small piece. It's a loss, certainly a loss. And Stern has been a master at bringing in revenue for radio.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Has there been any other positive for radio since the satellite radio companies have begun? Have they done anything good for terrestrial radio?
Oh, sure. You know, it's interesting how publicity plays on the minds of things, on minds of people. You know, we all love technology. I know you're a tech buff, and I'm a tech buff, and I love everything that's new. And, you know, every time there's a new iPod, I want to go out and buy it. And every time there's a new gadget, I've got to have it. And every chance I get to grab a new piece of software, you know, I'm into it. But there's this buzz that has been created somewhat by the satellite guys, and also just by the fact that there's so much other buzz in other areas with, you know, new iPods and new this and new that, that, you know, radio's old and old-fashioned and old technology, and yet the drop-off rates you would expect to be a lot larger than they really are. Now, there has been a very, very minuscule amount of drop-off in listening of radio, but it is literally minuscule. People are still spending, I think, 97%, either 97 or 98% of Americans are spending 20 hours plus a week with the radio. And that's more than they're spending with a lot of other media. And so, and that hasn't really changed. And so people are still listening to the radio, in spite of the fact that a lot of people would like to say that it's not cool anymore. You know, radio still provides a great service. And of course, there's a lot of different kinds of radio stations and formats that appeal to a lot of different people. There does seem to be some dwindling, minuscule, but some dwindling in the youth markets. And I think a lot of that is driven by the fact that some of the radio companies have gotten a little greedy and run a little bit too high a commercial load. But, you know, in general, radio's still got a lot going on. There's a lot of new programs, a lot of new formats, and actually, in the last 5 years, I think there's been more new formats launched than there had in the last 15 or 20 previously.
You know, I'm going to interrupt you for a second, Eric. It seems to me that that there's going to be a huge generational gap in 10 years, maybe less than that, of people who did not grow up taking their information and their entertainment from radio and have no expectation of doing so. I think I've got a 10-year-old daughter who would never think of turning on the radio for music or information or to be entertained. And if I mention radio to her friends, they're like, why would we listen to that? We can listen on the Internet. We can listen to our iPods. We have 500 channels of cable television. Parents that have Sirius or XM that tune to that. I mean, it just seems to me, and as an adult listening to terrestrial, in the last 2 years, it's, and when I'm in a car that doesn't have a Sirius, which is what I subscribe to, I get very frustrated with the radio. And it's not just the commercials. It's that everything that the personalities say is prepackaged. It's they're not spontaneous. I mean, the days of the old Q-Zoo from, you know, the 70s and 80s, where things happen spontaneously, seems 100 years ago, or you know, wherever it may be, Scott Shannon in New York, or of course Stern, or any of those kind of things. It seems like rather than refashioning their business plan or their creative plan, that terrestrial broadcasters are just recycling the same old hash.
Well, there's about 30 questions in that, and I'll try to address all 30 of them.
Okay.
The first part of that is that you're absolutely right. There's a huge generational gap that is taking place. I too have kids, and I also have nieces and nephews who are young adults now, college age, and I'm experiencing these kids who are saying to me, you know, well, we just never do listen to the radio. And yet I catch them listening to the radio, but it's not a high priority. It's not, when I grew up, and perhaps when you grew up, it was kind of the soundtrack of our lives. And to a lot of kids, it's not that any longer. And that is driven by two things. One is distractions in other areas. As you say, all the different things that they have, you know, they have texting and IM, and they have all the different music sources from the satellites and from the you know, the internet and from, you know, everything else, and they have video games and, you know, and cell phones and just lots of distractions. And so all of those things probably cut into it. And the bigger issue is that there's a lot of the reason this stuff has happened is because a lot of the companies stopped paying attention.
Mm.
You have companies like Clear Channel, for instance, and of course everybody likes to beat up on Clear Channel, and some of it's undeserved and some is well deserved. You have companies like that who said, you know what, we can kind of homogenize this stuff across many markets and turn it into McDonald's and make it formulaic and use one voiceover guy for multiple markets, and you know, we'll make sure that, you know, one music guy picks the music for multiple markets, and as a result, you know, running a lot of radio stations on autopilot or other forms, you know, satelliting them and so on, and as a result, those stations oftentimes sounded a little bland, and the theory was that, you know, let's take what's working in one place and multiply it into multiple places. And you know, it really was okay for a short period of time because it did sound good and it sounded different, but it seems to have staled out in some cases.
Mm.
So I think the responsibility is on all of the companies in radio to make sure that they're doing a good job. And of course, when I, you know, I don't want to sound like an old timer, but when I cut my teeth in the radio industry, I was 14 years old and I was on the air on a radio station. Well, you know, I was pretty awful when I was on the air at 14, but that's how you learn. And today, there aren't very many places where a 14-year-old kid or an 18-year-old kid or a 25-year-old person can learn to cut their teeth on radio, because the all-night show or the all-night weekend show where perhaps there weren't very many people listening, you know, where you could put a kid on the air to learn the ropes and learn how to become talented, those shows are now automated or satellited, and so there's not a farm team being developed. And so you have an industry where a lot of the talent was in the, you know, the previous generation, which is now starting to either wind down or get pushed out. And then, you know, you do have a smattering of younger talent, but it's much harder for them to learn and develop, and less people are willing to take chances on them, and there's fewer places.
So that all impacts
these things.
Doesn't it sort of seem like radio, which I love? I mean, and that's where we started our conversation 18 years ago. I mean, I love radio in whatever form it may be, but there's two other industries, media industries from the 20th century, that I think are facing the same issues, and that's book publishing and newspapers.
I think television is facing that as well.
Television as well. And
absolutely.
Television's finding other ways to... It seems like television is finding ways to adapt to the new reality or the new media expectations, but radio, newspapers, and book publishing is still done the same way it was in the 19th century. I mean, they have bigger problems, but...
Well, I disagree with that, there's so many services where I can put my book online and within a day receive a hard copy of my book. And they will also set up distribution and put it on Amazon, and there are services like that which have revolutionized the book industry. But to your point, and to confirm what you're thinking, unfortunately, most of the companies who are in the book business have not realized that, you know, they need to get with the 80s. Obviously, the 80s are gone, but all industries face this. This is something that happens, you know, every generation. There's a major shift. This just happens to be a much faster and much bigger shift because of what's happened in technology and high speed at which it's moving. And some of the newspapers have kept up, but most of them haven't. And, you know, the newspapers are starting to drop like flies. Readership is dropping like flies. And you know, I sit down to read the newspaper every morning because it's just a habit. And I, as I read through the stories, I thought, you know, I saw this on Drudge yesterday, or saw this on Google yesterday, and, you know, this is old news to me. There are things that it fulfills that I'm not going to see on Drudge or Google, because I don't go to local websites as much. and get, you know, things that are localized, and I like seeing that local stuff. But this is happening with newspapers. It's happening with all media, and even to television, to the extent that the YouTubes will have their impact and how that's all changing. The self-demand media and media that's going to be driven by the user, and of course this whole revolution is about user content. And moving that back to radio, I think that the ultimate user content on radio has been talk radio. Talk radio has been a place where you and I, in theory, can pick up the phone and get on the Sean Hannity show or the Rush Limbaugh show or whomever, and have a chat. Now, of course, the odds of us getting on that show, because there are tens of millions of people listening, I think Limbaugh has 25 million listening every day, and Hannity is close to that. It's not exactly an open forum, where, of course, the internet, anybody can put a blog on, and if they're good and they have something to say, the next thing you know, they've got hundreds of thousands of people reading them, or like you've got all these people who are reading you and listening to your podcast. And I do that. I sit here in my home workshop where I'm working on projects at night, and I listen to podcasts from people all over the world, and I learn things that I never knew anything about before that just wasn't possible. And it really empowers the people. But it all boils down to one thing, and that is that no matter how much you empower the people, if the people have nothing to say or if they have nothing creative to exhibit, they still have no product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what radio has been lacking, is that radio has not, and I don't want to generalize, because there are people out there who are contradicting what I'm saying by doing great creative things and new innovative things, but as a whole, it feels like the industry has gotten stale, and that staleness has been very much a result of dare I say, bankers ruling the roost and saying, look, let's cut expenses, let's automate this, and who cares?
Right.
I walked into, at the very early stage of the consolidation, before Clear Channel had even bought all these radio stations, I walked into the office of a very prominent, very wealthy financier who later got involved in one of the big plays. And he was starting to buy up radio stations at the time, and they'd buy them up and then they'd automate them and fire all the staff, and there's no more localism. And then he said to me, and he was dead serious, he said, this automation thing we're doing in the small markets, he says, I think we can do that in New York and Los Angeles and Chicago too. And I was mortified. I thought, that's the soul of radio. Radio's not just about a distribution method. Radio is really about one-on-one communication and entertainment. And if you take that soul away, the listeners are going to go away, and I think that's what's been driving a generation away, is that it's to some extent it's financially motivated. For instance, in the advertising industry, there are cell groups, which would be different groups of 18 to 24, 35, 44 age groups, and so on. And there are groups that are popular for advertisers, and then there are groups that are unpopular for advertisers. One of the reasons that you don't hear a lot of teens listening to the radio anymore is because there's no teen radio stations anymore.
Right.
Because teens are not a quote-unquote desirable demographic. They become desirable when they become 18 and they get credit cards. The advertisers don't want to support teen stations, and so the groups say, well, why should we have a station that gears to teens? Well, the answer is you should have one, because if you don't get teens interested in radio, they're not going to become listeners when they turn 25.
Right.
And there's going to be a giant gap of no one listening to the radio when these teenagers who are not paying attention aren't paying attention when they become what I call money demographics.
Right. Well, let me, I've got to interrupt you because we're going to run out of time, and I want to steer the conversation back to the XM Sirius proposed merger. One of the ironies in this merger to me, at least it seems like, is that these two companies whose content is largely unregulated still have to get FCC permission to merge. Does that seem right?
Well, yeah, of course it seems right. You know, the FCC controls the airwaves, and they control those airwaves. When XM and Sirius were granted their license, keeping in mind that there were thousands of people who applied for those licenses, and only two were granted. Thousands of people wanted to build companies. Two people got them. Sirius was originally called CD Radio, or was that XM? I'm confused. Anyway, when CD Radio, who was Margolis, got it, and then I think Panero got the XM. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But the bottom line was this, that the FCC said under no circumstances are you ever to merge. Under no circumstances can you join. And we want to keep it, you know, since we can only do two spectrums, we want to make sure that two different services exist so that these services are not dominated by one company. I spoke to a former FCC Commissioner, Susan Ness, who approved the merger at the time, or not the merger, but approved the satellite radio at the time. She said, absolutely, legally speaking, they cannot do it. The law will have to be changed in order to do it. And current FCC Commissioner Kevin Martin doesn't want it to occur. And I understand what Mel's trying to do, but I don't understand why they believe that they can get it through the FCC. Maybe they have some political connection that they feel is going to make it happen.
Do you think that they'll have to, that if that the olive branch here might be, you know, we'll give it serious consideration, but you'll have to bend to the same content rules that terrestrial?
No, I don't think it's going to be about content rules. The bottom line, and again, I spoke to the head of the NAB, David Rear, last week, and his position on this is this. Just because you have not been able to financially make it doesn't mean that the FCC should say, oh, well, you know, you guys couldn't make it. You can't stand on your own. We'll let you be together to make it. No, let them go out of business. Somebody else will buy it and make it work. Every radio station, every newspaper, everybody else in the United States has to live that way. And so I think that the likelihood of it getting approved is probably very unlikely. I don't think it's going to happen. I think the FCC is vehemently opposed to it, and I would be shocked if they get it through, but, you know, I'm wrong at least half of the time.
Do you think that Karmazin decided to go this route, maybe fully expecting it would be turned down, and that in the meantime he would build up XM and Sirius, he would build up Sirius, and XM would continue to be kind of flat, and that, you know, when all this was over, one would emerge and XM would have to be sold or shelved or something?
If I had an evil brain, and I'm not suggesting he does, but if I had an evil brain, that'd be a great way. I know someone who once tried to do a merger of two companies, and he never had any intention of doing it. But he learned everything he possibly could about every dime in the company, and was able to make major inroads as a result of that. Again, I'm not suggesting that that's the case here. I don't think Mel would launch something like that as a ruse. He's not that kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He fully intends to get it done, and he's the kind of guy who says, you know what, I'm strong enough, I can figure out a way to get people to change the law. And maybe he can.
Is it in the interest of the National Association of Broadcasters, NAB, to oppose the merger?
Well, the NAB's job is to support radio, and they feel as though that it's not good for the radio industry for the two to be together. I think they probably feel that if they both went out of business, it'd be better for radio. I don't feel that way. Again, back to the all ships, the tide rising all ships. If satellite radio succeeds, then, you know, that's good for all radio. Now, I suspect that what Karmazin will do is he'll take 50% of the stations and commercialize them and turn them into, you know, selling commercials, money making on the music stations, and then he'll have some that are commercial free.
If the two merge, if that is approved somehow, there's a lot of redundant channels and business functions that will no doubt be eliminated. Will satellite employees be considered pariahs when they go job hunting on terrestrial radio?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
If they have the talent and the skill, they'll be in demand.
you know, everybody knows everybody, and they're not evil people. We all have friends who've gone over to the satellite side, and, you know, some have left and come back. And, no, you know, and some work for both. I know people who do voice tracking for, you know, all the satellite channels, for the most part, are also automated. Just they do a pretty good job of it. Of course, you know, they're hiring a lot of the great talent that has been ignored by radio.
So, and we need to wrap up time-wise, Eric, but let me ask you this. Do you think that an Oprah Winfrey ride on Howard Stern's Sibian is that far off in the future?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're kind of indicating you don't think the merger is going to happen, so we're probably not looking at that possibility at this point.
I may be completely wrong, but I think that they're in for a pretty big battle. I think there's going to be a lot of political intervention, and there'll be a lot of political capital tried to be gained from this. But you know, I don't think it's going to happen. I happen to like those guys. I like them both, and I think that satellite radio has been good for the radio industry, if nothing else, to kick them in the butt and say, "Hey, get your act together." You know, it's been proven people still listen to commercials. I mean, there's new research that says 97% of people don't tune out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you should look into at some point. So I think it's good for radio, and I don't think the merger is necessarily good. I think that we need two different companies creating two different products. It keeps it competitive.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, you can learn more about the radio industry at Radio Inc. That's Inc. with a K, RadioIncSolid.com. And Eric, thank you so much for taking the time out to do an interview for Mr. Media today.
It was fun, Mr. Media.
And thank you, folks, for listening to the Mr. Media interview. For more fun, please visit www.mrmedia.com.